Hi, my name is Ben Armstrong.
Hi, this is David Koch.
My name is Thomas Maurer.
Hi, I'm Donna Sarkar.
Hi, my name is Lana Montgomery.
Hi, I'm Seth Warres.
Hi, I'm Aaron Thomas.
I'm Jess Dodson.
Hi, I'm Rocky Heckman.
Hi, I'm Sonia Cuff.
Hi, I'm Troy Hunt.
Hello, this is Wally Mead.
My name is Reid Purvis.
Hi, I'm Lars Klink.
Hi, my name is Alan Birchall.
Hi, I'm Adam Fowler.
Hi, I'm Scott Guthrie, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
All the latest Microsoft Cloud news, as well as industry guest deep dive conversations. It's a Need to Know podcast. All thanks to the CIA Ops patron community. The Need to Know podcast. Catch us on Twitter and Facebook, N2K Podcast, and online at ciaops.podbean.com.
Welcome along to a Need to Know podcast. My name is Robert Crane, and you join me for episode 248. So, bring you some news, and then we'll jump into a great interview around a new security ebook, which I think that everybody should have. But to kick off the news, probably the most exciting thing that has happened recently and was announced at the recent Microsoft Inspire virtual partner conference, that's a mouthful now, was Microsoft List. So Microsoft List has now basically gone GA. That means that it is going to start rolling out from the end of July, and it is going to be sent to the targeted release customers first, and then once that's completed at the end of the August, they'll then look at rolling that out to everybody else. So I'll make sure I put a link in the show notes for you to go and have a look at this and understand what's going on, look at some of the videos. There's quite a detailed amount of information to have a look at. Lists is going to be an interesting one because it sort of already exists in the Microsoft SharePoint space. It basically needed a improvement, an update, and this has happened with Lists. But now, like many other things in Microsoft, it has been sort of pulled out as its own little service, although it's still in SharePoint, still in OneDrive. So I'm very keen to get my hands on this and have a look at it, see how it works. I think it'll be well accepted by users, but traditional SharePoint people may struggle with it. So it's going to be interesting to see how this works, how it integrates. It's got a nice new modern UI look and feel. Is it going to be something that is of benefit when we've already got Outlook tasks to do, you know, all the other stuff, Planner and so on? Wait and see. I think it will be, but we'll just have to, again, wait and see what it's like when it comes out. So look out for that coming to a tenant near you. Now, also in line with this is a post here from Microsoft about connecting the tasks with Microsoft 365. Now, with Lists coming out, we're also seeing the task concept inside Teams changing. So what you're now able to do is you're now able to basically pin the Planner app to the left-hand side of your Teams desktop environment. Now that is going to give you basically the ability to see your Planner tasks, but also to see your to-do items as well. Now where that does seem to get a little bit confusing is that the Planner app and this concept of tasks is going to be renamed over time. So we're going to basically see that change names from Planner, and then Planner and To-Do, I believe, and then basically to just Tasks down the track. So a little bit confusing. Microsoft does have a bit of history with this, but the main thing is if you have a look at the notes here that I'll put up for you, is it is, I think, a way that gives you more options. It's a matter of understanding how you want to work. I think that To-Do is going to become the personal task list item for individuals, and then any other tasks assigned to them, probably again through things like Lists and Planner, will appear in your personal to-do item. And when you go in to look at this area inside Teams, you'll see your own personal tasks plus your group tasks as well. But unfortunately, it seems to be going through a bit of a name change and update at this point in time. So keep an eye out for that. Read the article, have a look at the video to understand these sort of changes and whether they work for you. Now, remember that you don't have to do all of these at once, right? So if you're not a fan of something like To-Do, well, then you don't have to use it. You can stay with your tasks in Outlook for the time being. But I would think in the long run, you need to pay attention to the direction that Microsoft's taking with this, what their approach is, because I think that's the one that's going to be favored, and many, many other items probably will be deprecated over time. Now, in line with these changes for tasks, we've got a post here around the Teams side of things and how it integrates with Planner and the Planner app and all that sort of information as well, the ability for it to be available on mobile. And as mentioned, the idea here is that when you pin it into your team on the left-hand side, it will be called the Planner app. And then in a few weeks, then it's going to be changed to Tasks by Planner and To-Do, which again is a bit of a mouthful. And then finally, later in the year, it's going to just become Tasks. So again, let's see what happens here in regards to Planner and Tasks and the renaming and what Microsoft's going to call all this. But make sure that you are aware of this if you do have to speak to users and help them understand the changes as well. I think this is for the better in general, but the alignment and getting the names together always is a bit of a challenge with Microsoft, who's sort of gone off in one direction. So keep an eye on that. A little bit confusing. I personally use To-Do, Planner, all of them together. I think they work really well, but this consolidation hopefully will again look at improving that and making that simpler in the long run. Now, Microsoft Inspire also brought us some information around this DataFlex product, which Microsoft is embedding into Teams. So think of it like a relational database with more power than what we've seen in things like SharePoint sites and lists. We've got an upcoming interview with someone to give us some more detail about that, but I'll put the link in the show notes so you can go off and have a look at this new concept of DataFlex. It's, again, tied to the Power Platform. It's tied to the Power Agents concept. So it's going to allow people to store the data, I suppose, in a more structured way, more aimed at a database with the relational stuff, which is what we're seeing our customers wanting to do. So one of the big takeaways is that Microsoft Teams in its own is becoming effectively a platform. It's becoming an operating system that people just open up and work in day by day. That's going to allow them to do their conversations, their files, their all this other stuff, their bots, their automation. And this DataFlex is going to provide even more power for that. And again, it's another indication of the importance Microsoft is placing on the Power Platform. So again, have a look at the article in the show notes, see what's coming down there, get ready for it to appear in your tenant to basically have a play with and solve any of those sort of data storage problems and relational databases you may need within Teams. Now, Yammer, the new Yammer has been updated. If you haven't seen it, it's got a nice, fresh, modern look now, very much like what we're seeing coming out with Lists and Planner and so on. And that is now generally available to the population of tenants. So go in, I'll have a look at the article, see what it is. A lot of people have been very down on Yammer over the years. I think it still has a role to play. I see Yammer as fulfilling the need for global communications across an organization. I think Teams are very good for individual focused conversations around a topic, a project, a group of people completing a single operation like admin, finance, or HR. I think that Yammer fills the need for something across the organization, conversations around what's happening in the company, messages from the CEO, training, what our competitors are doing, what we see out in there in the market. So I see that as a very good component. I also like Yammer in the fact that it allows people just to focus on the conversations rather than get caught up in Teams, which can be files and tabs and tasks and conversations, and I think that can be a lot for many users to take in. So I do like Yammer. You can integrate it inside Teams as well. I think it does have a place. I think now that it's been modernized with a new interface and purposed into the collaboration environment we have today, I think it's going to be something that really should consider as part of an overall strategy when you're looking at collaboration, because generally all tenants today will get Yammer, and it is something that you can take advantage of. And the idea is at its core, it's about letting people work in an environment where they can easily share information. Once they share it publicly, then it's much easier to find, locate, search that information. So again, Yammer will help in that respect, and generally is aimed at the corporate-wide conversations, whereas a team chat is designed for that little section of the company. Now, another interesting thing that I saw was the public preview of Microsoft Endpoint Data Loss Prevention. So we know that data loss prevention is about preventing restricted information from leaking or leaving the organization, which we can identify. Think tax file number, think credit card numbers, those sort of private information that you want to keep sensitive inside the organization. Typically, that has applied to a user. So what that means is when a user sends an email or does a share, DLP jumps in and sort of takes over. So we can do that, you can't do that, this is blocked, you can override, we're going to audit this and so on. Now, what's happened here is this has been enhanced to allow this to basically work on the endpoint, so largely to work on devices. So we can now add this concept of DLP to our device environment. Now that may be because you may have a device where you have multiple users working on that device. So again, I think this is another great option and talks to the importance of the mobility and the integration between devices and individuals inside the organization, but also focuses on the importance of keeping data secure in all those environments. So make sure the link is in the show notes so you can go and have a look. That is rolling out if you do want to go out and have a play with it. I strongly recommend that DLP is something that you consider. That DLP is part of Microsoft 365 Business Premium, for example, and can be implemented quickly and easily. Now, another one, I've been very positive on the Bing Enterprise Search integration. So what that means is that when a user uses the Edge browser, the new Edge browser, and they bring up Bing as a search engine, they can log into that. Now, once they log into Bing, what will happen is that their profile, the information, things from their Microsoft 365 tenant will also be available on that same search page. Now, when a user does a search, they can search the internet as well as their own internal information. So this is this concept of, you know, a bit like Delve, bringing Delve to the search and integrating the internet search and the intranet search together. I strongly recommend that you do that. It works really well. Now, basically, it's a really good start page. So if you have single sign-on set up your environment thanks to a Windows 10 Azure AD joined environment, when you start up the Bing browser and you have logged in, you'll basically get a nice summary of the documents, the people, the things that are relevant to you. We should see this improve with Project Cortex coming down the line, not too far away. So this article here tells us that there's going to be more integration, better integration coming with this enterprise homepage. And I'd certainly recommend, if you haven't looked at it, to spend some time, because it does make it a lot easier for users to work and basically have a start page every day rather than having to go to a URL and log in and then, you know, jump around the interface there. They may not be familiar. This is very much about bringing or pushing the information that's relevant to the end user, to them directly. And I think the Bing Enterprise Search does that really, really well. And just basically a matter of logging into the browser to enable that. Now, the last one I've got here is some improvements in the Azure AD ability for users to report unusual sign-in activity. So if you don't know, there is an Azure AD sign-in portal that you can go to. So basically, the user can go to mysignins.microsoft.com. When they do that, they now have a number of options in there. They'll be able to, for example, review, you know, where and when they last logged in, take some actions, report things. Now, one of these things, if you do get unusual activity, you can go in there and you can say, look, you know, this login from this location definitely wasn't me. And that can then obviously take additional security actions as well on top of the standard ones that Azure AD is doing for you as well. So certainly recommend this as an option for users to understand and have as a resource that they can access. So it will help protect their identity, it will help them control their identity, see where it's being used, and then again be able to take actions. You can also go in here as a user and you can control the devices for your multi-factor authentication. So you can determine whether it's the authenticator, the phone number, a security key, and so on. Gives you a nice summary for that. You can also filter and search on, like I said, the recent logins and things like that, and you do get quite a good deal of information in there. So at the end of the day, recommend that you have a look at this and encourage users to be able to go to this and use this to, again, review their activities, their login activities, but also take actions on anything which seems unusual or untoward. So again, something to have a look at. I'll make sure that all the links here are in the show notes. If you do want to get in contact with me about the content or comments or feedback, please do so via at N2K Podcast on Twitter and Facebook. You can email me feedback@needtoknow.cloud or director at CIA Ops directly. Don't forget that I'm also on the Twitter at Director CIA. Appreciate you taking the time to listen to this episode. I hope you enjoyed this interview. It was a fun one to do, and I think there's some great information here about this new Microsoft 365 Security for IT Pro ebook. So welcome along to our discussion here with Michael Van Holbeck. How are you, Michael?
I'm doing very well, thanks.
I obviously not very good at butchering, or I am very good at butchering foreign names. So now that I've defined that it's foreign and I'm not very good at doing that, do you want to just introduce yourself to people, that you let them know who you are and basically what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. So the name is Michael Van Hoornbeek, but most people know me under my nickname, Van Hybrid. I've been active in the tech communities for a couple of years now. Originally started out on the Exchange side of things, but trickled into Office 365 about 10 years ago now, and ventured into security after that. Over the past couple of years, obviously, you know, did a lot of things. I run my own business today, consulting business out of Europe, and I've written a couple of books, and one of the recent books is the M365 Security for IT Pros ebook subscription, if you will.
Now, that is obviously what drew you to my attention. I've looked at what, you know, Tony Redmond, we've had Tony Redmond on the show talking about his Office 365 IT Pros. Was that where the inspiration came from writing that, or did it come from what you see out there in the market? What sort of, because I think that many people may not appreciate how much of a challenge, let's say, writing an actual book is. So where did the drive to, you know, basically go and create this publication come from?
Twofold, right? I've, along with Tony and Paul Cunningham, I've written the first four books of Office 365 for IT professionals, right? So I'm very familiar with the publishing style, the method of doing that. And generally, you know, I love writing, right? It kind of keeps me on my A game myself. You know, you have to stay current. But, you know, going back to that book model, it wasn't just, you know, hugely interesting. It's also very fulfilling. However, after, you know, four episodes, I should say, or four editions of that book, you know, life kicked in, business, you know, time. Didn't really account for it anymore. So I kind of stopped writing for the book. But two and a half years later, it kind of started itching again. Now, obviously, because I ventured into security a while ago, I felt there is a need for a similar book, which, you know, covers the Microsoft 360 or just Microsoft security technologies, right? Because Microsoft, for better or worse, is a security vendor, right? They have so many things to do, in the area of security. But yet, although there's books out there, there is none of them that have the, you know, let's stay current, let's stay up to date, basically, you know, confining you to Microsoft docs, which, you know, isn't bad, but it kind of lacks that real world experience. So that's how the idea grew of writing a similar book to do to Tony's Office 365 for IT professionals, hence the name of the Microsoft 365 security. Have the same model, and then just, you know, ride along on, you know, whatever Microsoft brings in terms of security. Now, what you said is true. It is challenging, not just writing a book by itself. I think from a page perspective, right, the initial edition, and it's going to grow, is about 353 pages. And that took us 8 months to write, because one of the challenges that you have when you write about cloud is while you're writing it, they're changing it. So if you write a 50-page chapter, chances are that by the time you get to the end, you have to rewrite 10 of them. So it takes an initial lot of effort to get to the point where you're like, yes, we're current enough to publish this. But the real work now starts now, right? Where, you know, on a monthly basis, we need to update the content for everything that Microsoft does. And, you know, I don't have to tell you, it's crazy, right? The pace and the rate at which they, you know, and introduce new features, change features.
I think this is part of the thing that is such a struggle is again, you know, people who work in the industry probably have some inkling, but those outside may not, or working with it day to day. If you look at a lot of the Microsoft docs, so docs.microsoft.com, you see a lot of times they don't put screenshots in anymore because the screens are always changing, updating. Now, again, go back to the book. It's like, it seems like, you know, some brand of madness to go and write a book and screenshots and update because tomorrow, major event, something changes, we've got to go back and redo the book. I mean, what's the it is a book I will call out that is going to update and improve as a subscription over time, but it seems like a hell of a lot of work, especially in the security space.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And it absolutely is, right? This is also a reason why you can't do this alone, right? We're an author team. There's five people on board. I'm looking for someone. Well, we're actually onboarding someone new for some new chapters as well, because, you know, every author needs to focus on their chapter, and you can do one, you can do two, at best, maybe three chapters, you know, if they're, you know, if they're small enough, I'd say. But once you venture into more than that, it becomes, you know, I'm not going to say a full-time job, but it consumes a lot of time, just because A, you have to stay current, B, you have to, you know, understand the technology, preferably have worked with it, and then C, you know, transcribe it into an actual book that is valuable to readers. So yeah, I agree. I mean, call me crazy, and I've done it before, but sometimes I really wonder, like, you know, why did I do this again? Like, really? Especially around Ignite, right? Last year, looking at what Microsoft announced in new features, that scares us, right? We know that once Ignite is passed, that we're probably going to have to write 30, 40% of the book. But, you know, that's just the promise or the premise of the book itself. Sure, we know it's a lot of work, and we'll see where we'll end up with, right? And it's a commitment we've made. So there's one way to, you know, to go about it, is just do it right.
Well, I think, again, you can be congratulated. Anybody spending the amount of time, the investment, I myself know how involved it is to create the content, to do this regularly, and then to do it in a field which is constantly updating. So, again, I salute your craziness and appreciate the amount of effort that you're going to invest in that. And, again, I think people will get a lot of benefit from it. Now, if we turn to the content and the structure of the book, how did you think about presenting security information in this environment, given that lots and lots of options and entry points and you know, subscriptions and options and tenants, there's a lot of variation here. So give us a bit of an idea of how do you see the logical flow or the structure of the book when it comes to mapping to security in Microsoft 365?
So it's an interesting question, because the structure of the book, I think over its lifespan before it was published, has changed seven or eight times. Even now, we're discussing, shouldn't we do this? Shouldn't we do that? For the simple reason that it isn't always clear what the best way to present something is. I mean, the way that we've structured the book right now is obviously, you know, start with an introduction, because security is something, you know, entirely on its own. There's people coming from the security side that are well versed in you know, risk frameworks and security controls and how to deal with that. But there's a lot of IT professionals out there that, you know, don't necessarily have a background. So giving them some you know, ideas of, you know, how security works, but in a practical way, is important. We don't want to become a CISSP book that explains an entire framework and, you know, makes it very theoretical. It needs to be a pragmatic book. So the introduction we've kept light. I think it's about a 20, 25 pages, just so that people understand how security as a concept fits Microsoft 365 and vice versa. And we basically tell people, hey, you know, From a high level, these are the things that you have to consider, right? You know, you have to have a plan. A plan is always a good idea, so that you don't implement stuff just, you know, for sake of implementing it. I think that's the core message. And then we tell them, you know, and here's a couple of ways of how you can do this. But whether you're a NIST addict, or you love ISO, or, you know, PCI DSS, I mean, there are so many frameworks out there. We just call them out and tell them, you know, go out, do your research, use whatever is working for you, because it really depends on your situation. And then from there, we venture into the technologies that Microsoft offers, the different areas, where identity as the cornerstone of security is you know, a natural first one, right? Where, you know, we venture into identity. And then we've taken a look at, okay, well, you know, imagine that you've done identity right? That you've implemented all the security controls that you could do or you want to do or that Microsoft offers. Where do you go next, right? Not necessarily in terms of, you know, you have to do identity fully first and then only then you go to something else. It's more of the, you know, okay, identity is covered. Let's look at something else. And then we've seen that, or we've considered that, in order to do something on the endpoint, you have to have a management layer. You have to somehow manage those devices, which, you know, kind of ties into Intune mobile device management, you know, device management as a whole, which is why that is the second chapter. And you know, we explain the basics of how do you even start, you know, managing those devices and keeping them secure in a way through the MDM channel. And then, you know, we bolt onto that where after Intune, we dive into Defender ATP. Now, to be honest, the Defender ATP chapter and the threat protection, so the Microsoft threat protection chapter, and the Intune chapter, for better or worse, they're giving me somewhat of a headache. Not in terms of the content itself, but I'm not sure how familiar most people are with Defender ATP and its features, but it's a behemoth. So many features in there. There, you know, there is the Defender Firewall, or you're just calling it the Windows Firewall. There is Defender AV. There is Attack Surface Reduction Rules. There is Windows Information Protection, which isn't part of Defender, but it's Windows Security, which is managed through Intune. So the question then becomes, well, you know, where do we even put that feature? Do we call the chapter, you know, instead of Defender ATP, call it Endpoint Security? And do you only cover Defender ATP, or do you also go into the Windows native security features? Or do you kind of, you know, pull it out and make a chapter called Windows 10 Security? But, you know, once you start having a chapter on Windows 10 Security, you know, what's stopping us from going into a macOS security chapter? And then obviously you're going to have some redundancy of the Intune chapter that actually belongs in the Windows 10 chapter. So, I mean, I think you can appreciate just me trying to explain, you know, where does what belong. We're still trying to figure out what the best method is. And on top of that, I mean, we have regular contact with Microsoft, obviously, not just for the book, but for various other reasons. And Microsoft Threat Protection, which is kind of the umbrella over a lot of things. Today in the book, it has its chapter of its own right, where we explain what it is, what it can do pragmatically. But we see a convergence of some of the technologies into MTP. So the challenge and the question that we have moving forward as well over the next couple of months, well, should we just, you know, put it in an MTP chapter, which makes sense if you want to align with Microsoft. However, then the MTP chapter becomes that huge monster, which, you know, isn't digestible, isn't easy to read. So my best guess, and you know, we're figuring this out as we move along, is that over the next couple of months and editions that we will release, we'll shuffle things around. We'll move things where I believe and the author believes that it makes sense. And based on feedback and Microsoft's direction, we'll just, you know, mix it up again.
So obviously you've decided to take the Alice in Wonderland path and see what happens when you go down the rabbit hole, no doubt. And that's always a good, fun journey. But on the other side, how would you recommend somebody who's coming to the environment? So let's say, you know, as an IT pro, maybe not super familiar with all the in-depth options and things like ATP, but it's done the basic exchange and basic setup of a tenant. Now they're coming and they've purchased your publication there. How would you recommend they consume that publication? Should they read it from beginning to end? Should they pick something that is of interest and dive into that chapter? What's your recommendation on, you know, for a technical person who's buying this to improve their knowledge or understanding of the security side of the product they're implementing for customers? What's your recommendation for an approach to consumption?
Yep. So imagining that they're, you know, in a plain vanilla state where they haven't done much and they're new to the subject, I think reading it front to back is actually, and in that order, is a good approach. Again, because there is a certain logical, you know, chapter build-up, identity, device management, endpoint management. Then we go into cloud app security, threat protection, and we kind of end with information protection or compliance. So to me, that's a chronological and logical order in which I would mostly also, you know, implement stuff at a customer's premise. So that's definitely what I would recommend. However, you know, if they've already got certain bits and pieces in order, then there's nothing preventing them to you know, pick and choose the chapters of topics that they are most interested in. But if that's not true, then reading chapter by chapter in the chronological order is definitely what I'd recommend.
So again, looking at the people who are, you know, going to be your target market, you know, what would you say are going to the people that are going to get the most benefit out of it? Is obviously an IT pro, I think, those who are managing a Microsoft 365 tenant, but maybe more so those who are looking to manage devices and that. So, you know, again, who do you see as being the people that really get the most value out of this?
So we target, for lack of a better word, multiple profiles, if you will. And I hate the word profile, but you know, it's not just the IT admin, right? It's first of all, it's the IT admin that's new to M365 in general, right? Obviously, we focus on the security side of things, but if you then take a look at Tony's book and our book, you know, if you combine them, then you literally cover M365, period. So I think, you know, they kind of go hand in hand if you have no prior experience whatsoever. If, however, you've already got Office 365 or M365 and you want to take it one step further, you want to go more into security, you want to secure your environment and do it right, then that's definitely some of the people that we're targeting, right? The ones that are new to the topics that don't really, you know, have that experience. And we want to keep it practical. That's why there is a lot of real world examples. Like, this is how you do it, go there, click here, do this, so that it kind of becomes a guide for people without necessarily becoming, you know, a deployment guide, because there's much more, you know, to deploying stuff than just telling them click here and click there. So we provide that background for those people. But at the same time, you know, we don't want to cross out or, you know, leave out the security professionals. There's a lot of security professionals out there. But they have the other thing. They understand the security side of things. They understand process and why security matters and how to do that from a process perspective. But they don't necessarily have the experience with Microsoft's security products. So the book is very valuable to them because, you know, they may know the concepts of identity management. And then we explain how identity management and identity protection is done through Azure AD in the context of M365. They may know the context of device management and why it's important. Well, we explain them why it's important in M365, why it's the underpinning for, you know, a lot of security features in Windows, but also from a deploying Defender ATP, why, you know, what the benefits are and so forth and so on. So it's covering and targeting kind of the two ends of the spectrum, by extension, everything in between. The goal, obviously, is to become that reference. And I'm not sure if you know, people still remember, but there used to be this administrator guide for Exchange back in the days. It was a pocket guide, if you will, a thick, small book. But it's one that you could always refer to when you're doing things in a field like, oh, what was the latest status on A or B or C? Or how is this or how is that? And we want to become that reference, right? Because it's always up to date. If you have the latest version of the book with you, you should always have the latest information that is relevant. One of the challenges of consuming information in docs.microsoft.com is there's so much there, right? Sometimes even contradicting. And what we try and do is also take what is most common, what is most important, what we see is, you know, heavily used, and put that in the book. Obviously, we don't cover everything A to Z. It is impossible to cover everything A to Z. So we deliberately make the choice that technologies that we believe is not even, you know, much used by anyone, to put it in the book, or at least it doesn't get the same priority as things that we believe are really important.
All right. So if we look at the content, the stuff you've talked and the structure, what do you think that most people will be surprised to learn? What do you think is going to be the big thing they're going, I didn't know that, or I didn't appreciate that, or I haven't, you know, this, you know, what do you think is really going to be something that's going to be something they're probably not aware of, or haven't implemented, or haven't thought about, that your book is able to, you know, bring to light?
So what I hope is that after consuming the book, people understand the necessity, but also the value of the integration between all the products. It's a point that we're trying to make really heavily, so that people understand, well, it's not just, you know, pick and choose whatever you want to do and just do that. It's, if you implement all of these things, then you get tremendous value because of, you know, signals being shared and cross, you know, cross-platform operations and, you know, multi-layered approach in security. So I think that's one really big point. And we try and point it out throughout the chapters as well. Like, if you do this, you get that in product, you know, XYZ. For instance, if you deploy Defender ATP, then you get that rich e-discovery, the rich discovery of applications on the machine. You get that rich discovery of which cloud applications are going to be used. And, oh, by the way, it's surfaced in cloud app security. It's surfaced in threat protection. There's information in secure score. And then in the other chapters, the ones of cloud app security, the ones of threat protection, we then dive deeper into the, oh, remember when you enabled this in the Defender ATP? Well, you know, this is how it, what it looks like and what you can actually do with it. So I think that's definitely one of the things where people can see the benefit of doing that. But in addition to that, I think it's the real world examples where we just don't, it's not just rehashing information. I would say rehashing information is easy. It's more the, okay, so we've done this before. We've implemented it at customers. We've run into some issues, or we've seen something, stuff that's broken, and we call it out. Like, there's numerous examples where the real world boxes tell you, this is what Microsoft tells you, but, you know, hold on, this is what it does in the real world, so be careful. Just don't make the same mistake I did, because, you know, someone has to be the first and run into that brick wall and realize, oh, right, it's not really as documented, right? And we also give the tips of, hey, if you're going to do this, keep in mind that doing it one way is probably going to be easier for you rather than going down the other route. Making that, you know, for them more practical, and hopefully also a less painful experience in some cases to deploy things.
So let's have step back here and let's have a think about, or let what you're thinking on, why should people be considering the Microsoft security stack over potentially, you know, other options that are out there? Now, obviously, we've got the integration piece and that speaks to it, but are there any other key pieces to your mind that really helps the Microsoft security option stand out from, you know, competitors?
That's a dangerous question because, you know, I could say, hey, they've got the best solutions, and I don't think that's necessarily true, right? I don't think that all the security products from Microsoft are the best in the world. So let's take yet another step back and look at where you're coming from and you know, what your environment looks like. I truly believe that the platform play is what sets Microsoft apart. You can cherry pick your solutions, your security solutions, and deploy, you know, let's say firewall vendor X, and then endpoint protection vendor Z, and then server, you know, antivirus endpoint protection vendor A, and then, you know, move on to web application firewalls vendor, whatever it is. And then you've got all these maybe niche products or point solutions that may be great solutions on their own. But then, you know, you've got a bunch of stuff that maybe doesn't talk to one another, or where you have to go through, you know, a series of God knows what of, you know, awful integrations to make them talk to one another. I mean, From a security perspective, and looking at how an attack unfolds, there is the cyber kill chain, right? And there is various way of depicting it, but there's certain stages that an attack goes through. And basically what that method or kind of tries to convey, the message that it kind of tries to convey is there's an order of things, and in order to protect from an attack or any of those threats, you have to have a multi-layered approach. Now, it's great if you have a super firewall that blocks everything at the ingress point, and then you have a perimeter. But what if the firewall didn't block it, right? It goes to the next layer. But wouldn't it be great if the firewall could talk to the next layer, or vice versa, and then share information like, hey, I saw something that may be suspicious, but I'm not sure, so I didn't block it. But, just as an FYI, here's a bit of metadata to look into, and then consider when you're doing your investigations, right, into the next layer. And then onto the next, and to the next, so that you have a rich set of contexts. And the fact that all these Microsoft solutions are integrated, and I know I'm still coming back to that integration point, that is what makes it super valuable, and the fact that it is super easy. Some of these integrations is just one click away. So sure, if you're a security guru working for a couple of years in the sector, where you've had great experiences with some solutions, I'm pretty sure you can build something that is rock solid, no doubt, right? Microsoft isn't the only security vendor there. But if you're coming from an IT pro background where you have no experience or little experience, then A, it becomes a lot easier. B, you get a really high level of protection because, the solutions they do sell, they are great, right? They are top-notch. Defender, for instance, Defender ATP or Defender in general, has a bad connotation still, because in the early days, let's face it, let's not kid ourselves, it was awful. It was a horrible antivirus product. And it got a bad name. And, reputation is something that, takes ages to build and minutes to kill. Well, it was killed before it even got a good reputation. Now, what little people realize, and it's changing now, is that Defender antivirus has consistently been one of the top performing antiviruses for the past couple of years. Even more so, Defender ATP, the, for better or worse, the ER, XDR layer on top of that, is consistently scoring in the top products next to, solutions like CrowdStrike or anything else. Not just making it a great integrated solution, but if you choose to just use that bit and piece, so to treat some of Microsoft's solutions as a point solution, you would still get a huge value out of it. Now, at the end of the day, it really depends on your environment, right? Microsoft isn't a firewall vendor, or at least not a on-premises firewall vendor. So you're going to have to work with other vendors as well. And this is where, then the platform play again comes in. We haven't covered it yet in the book, but it is on its way. Azure Sentinel, for instance, it has the capability of bringing together these signals of these point solutions that you may have, in order to do, to have better detection capabilities, better hunting capabilities, and therefore, to increase your security posture. So to me, it's more the consultant's point of view. It really depends what you're coming from, but it could be that you're looking for point solutions for specific needs, but it also could be that you're just, nowhere, quote unquote, and that you can increase your security posture, all in all, with the combination of all these technologies. And the latter is something that we see more and more, just because that's where the market is evolving to. But at the end of the day, you as a business owner probably appreciate this as well. People buy license packs. Right? They pay, let's say, M365 E3, or they've bought an M365 E5. I think it would be a waste of time and money not to implement any of Microsoft security features, because A, you've purchased them, you're paying for them. So if you want to get your ROI, you better do something with it, right? Why would you pay for two separate endpoint protection solutions if you've got one of the better ones already in your license package that you're paying for?
So with all of this, and I agree with you, the Defender really has improved over time and people should take another second look at it. It works fine. Again, make sure we're judging apples with apples. But let's, as we're sort of winding up here, what do you see with your knowledge and your focus that has been there on the security side of things with Microsoft? Where do you see this sort of going? What developments do you see or think that Microsoft is going to bring to us, you know, to basically help us combat what obviously would seem to be a large increase in the threats that many tenants, many people, large and small, are facing? What's sort of the future holding, A, for the products, and maybe B, the people that are going to be implementing these or monitoring these or be responsible for these for customers?
So really good question. Obviously, I don't have a magic eight ball that tells me what the future is going to hold. But if you take a look at the past developments or the past couple of months, and at what Microsoft has been doing is they're making IT security a lot more accessible, not from a pricing perspective only, but they're making it easier for non-security folks to get to a better security posture. And it's not just from a protection side of things, right? If we transpose this into a NIST cybersecurity framework where, you know, protect, detect, respond, and let's just leave off the other phases for a second, then traditionally, a lot of people that are not necessarily IT security professionals, you know, put a lot of emphasis on protection. But from an assumed breach perspective, a mindset, you know, trying to just protect your environment isn't going to make it anymore, right? It just isn't enough. You need to be able to detect breaches because, you know, they happen. For all you know, you've already been breached. So getting into that assume breach mentality also means that you have to venture into how am I going to hunt for threats? How am I going to detect that they're happening after they happened? And what I see there is that a lot of the effort from Microsoft has gone into making detections easier, better, more automated, basically help people that are not the top IT security professionals getting to a level where they can be more than reasonably ensured that they're safe. A good example is Microsoft Threat Protection. As I mentioned earlier, I see a convergence kind of happening there. MTP is bringing together, you know, Azure Identity Protection, Cloud App Security, Defender ATP, Office ATP into, you know, not just a single portal from a management perspective, but also getting that information in one place. Being able to consume that information and search for threats. Not just manually search for threats through the advanced hunting capabilities, but also having an engine, right, in MTP that correlates information, that consumes data over these sources, and then is able to build, you know, attack or timelines of an attack, basically construct a kill chain, and then detect, oh, hold on, you know, that message that came in, which was benign at first, now actually triggered something else on the endpoint, and that is a malicious payload, so that email is part of that kill chain, and it kind of do that full detection, and it can do that in an automated way. And I think this is where we're going to get to more and more, making it more accessible, making it easier to implement, making it better to detect, and then obviously give you the tools to respond in an adequate manner. And I see that we'll or I expect that we will see a lot more of that in the future, at least in the coming months and years.
Okay, all right. So as we round off, what I'll give you a chance is to just let people know a bit more about the book, how they get it, what the idea and the thinking is behind it, how it's a subscription and the benefits there, and then just let people know how they can get in contact with you, what's the best way for them to keep in touch with you on the socials or ask any questions that they may not have got answered on this podcast. So if you can share that with us, that'd be fantastic.
Sure, absolutely. So the easiest way to get the book is to go to our website, which is m365securitybook.com. It gets you to our blog where we have links to Gumroad platform through which we sell the book. which is also where we post updates. Whenever we, you know, create an update of the book, this is where we will share it. And then all of the authors are active on one or multiple social media channels. I myself am regularly active on Twitter, so you can find me on @VanHybrid, where if you have any questions, you can reach out to us, obviously through the website or via email, feedback@m365securitybook.com. You can reach out, ask questions, point out that, you know, that typing errors, spelling errors, anything that you may want to ask, just shoot over an email to us. And, you know, that is also something that we really encourage people to do, because we learn as we go, and your feedback is really important, because if there's things you like, you'd like to see more or less, or want to change, then that feedback helps us prioritize those efforts in the future. So whether it's Twitter or via email or through the website, we're definitely approachable.
So the other thing I think that you've neglected to point out to people is that books at a bit of a discount at the moment because it's looking to increase price as it adds volume. Is that correct?
Yep, it is. So obviously introduction offer to kind of break into the market. But as we will be adding more chapters over the next couple of months, we will more than likely, you know, I'm not going to say hike the price, but increase the price to increase the level to the price point where we actually think it belongs. So right now it is a somewhat of a bargain, but it's always good to get, you know, give people the opportunity to, you know, step in early and take it from there.
No, I agree with you. I think that's the thing. And I tell people, you know, get on now, because obviously it's going to grow, add more material. The security stuff from Microsoft has continued to expand. This is going to be a great reference material. Currently $24.95 available on the site. That will increase obviously time. So now's the time to get in, take advantage of it. You've heard from the authors here. I think it's been great information. Hopefully, again, we'll get them back to cover off any updates. I'm sure it's going to happen in a relatively short period of time when Microsoft releases more product. But I will take this opportunity to thank Michael for his time and also for the time invested in creating a fantastic publication like this. So again, Michael, thank you very much for being part of the podcast.
Thanks for inviting me. Really appreciate it, Robert. And thanks for supporting the book.
No problems. All right. So again, thank you everybody for listening to this episode of the Need to Know podcast.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Microsoft 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selections available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.